Welcome back to the Brian Park Project from NPR News, online all the time at npr.org/Brian Park. All you folks out there, you know what you're doing with things on the internet? You're emailing them, you're sharing them, you're viewing them, you're commenting upon them, you're declaiming them, defaming them, extraordinary renditioning them. And so we collect all this, we take notes on it, we spew it back to you, and we call it the most. Some of my compatriots join me here as we speak of the most emailed and viewed things on the internet. Mark is one of these compatriots.
Compatriotically, I have a most emailed at Washington Post. Great headline, a vast left-handed conspiracy pointing out that Barack Obama and John McCain are both southpaws. I don't know if you noticed that, but this has happened before. The last time it happened was in 92. Bush, 41, Clinton, and even Ross Perot all left-handed. And a little bit of a trend that they point out in that six of the last 12 presidents going back to Truman, we're left-handed. That's about half, even when only 10% of the general population is left-handed. So.
Wow. I didn't know that.
That's significant.
That is significant. But there's a certain creativity in left-handers, too. You know,
problem-solving, they also point out rhetorical ability.
Plus, if you drop the jab as a righty, you're susceptible to the southpaw sneaking in.
It's so odd that, you know, we see presidents signing things so often. Like, there's so many signing photo ops, but yet I've never noticed, like, the weird crooked hand thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, here's a story most emailed at the Chicago Tribune. Also, a really good headline because it couldn't be more factual. Report: and it is a report. Blackhawks wings January 1 at Wrigley Field. So let's describe what all these words mean. Blackhawks do have wings, but these are hockey teams they're talking about.
Oh.
The Chicago Blackhawks and the Detroit Red Wings. Mm-hmm. January 1 is a date in the calendar, the first date in the Roman calendar. And Wrigley Field is an outdoor arena.
Yes.
So according to this report, there is a report that says there'll be an outdoor hockey game in Chicago on January 1st, which is pretty cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah, people in Chicago are really excited about it. It's the NHL's third outdoor game. They had one over in Edmonton. They had one in Buffalo. It's really cool that once a year, people pay attention to the NHL because they move the game outside.
Yeah.
I think everyone's
cold enough. That's going to be a cold game.
I'd like to see them bowl outside. Yeah. Trisha.
Hello, hello. I have one of the most emailed stories at USA Today. This is a guy we've talked about on the show before. It's the guy Kent Couch, who wanted to fly a lawn chair powered by balloons across the state line from Oregon into Idaho. Not sure why it had to be Oregon into Idaho. I'm not sure any of that stuff. But anyway, he successfully accomplished it over the weekend. He flew for about 9 hours. He lifted off in Oregon, in Bend, Oregon, and he ended up in Cambridge, Idaho. He covered about 235 miles in those 9 hours. He had a lawn chair rigged with more than 150 giant party balloons filled with helium. Mm-hmm. You may ask yourself, why, Kent Couch, why did you feel the need to do this? His answer says it has to do with his childhood dream.
I don't know about girls, but I think most guys look up to the sky and wish they could ride on a cloud, seeing the magic carpet, or just hanging onto some balloons and filling that lift.
What?
Yeah.
Most guys, no. No.
Trisha, as the female, do you, like all men, dream of riding on a cloud or a magic carpet?
I used to look up at the clouds a lot. I used to kind of imagine kind of walking on them and stuff. But I don't think my dreams ever brought me into a lawn chair powered by balloons.
Know
but
about
I will
girls.
Say, a certified female, Laura Conaway, earlier today was saying, man, I always wanted to do that.
I think most men do dream of sitting in a chair and shooting things with a gun.
That's part of this mission. We should talk about how he came to Earth. This is the best part. Is he shot at the balloons with his Red Ryder BB gun. You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah.
I was thinking nine hours in a chair without TV would be pretty bad. But if you get to shoot a lot of balloons at the end, it's pretty good.
How high do you get, do you know?
This guy was so high. Oh, you mean altitude. I'm sorry.
They just quote people who were watching, and they estimated 100 to 200 feet off the ground.
So below, like, cruise. A Cessna, probably.
Oh, yeah, 200 feet, yeah.
He wasn't
that high up.
I really can't let this go. I mean, how many boys are like...
Not that many.
Yeah.
I hope there's no copycat ballooning as a result.
Well, this guy is actually a copycat himself, apparently. Yeah. He saw somebody do it in a news report, and that's how he got
it. It's a common dream we all share.
Yeah.
It's not a copycat. It's in the zeitgeist.
Right. Yeah. It's in the DNA, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. Ian, what do you have?
I have a most viewed from Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Krause finally beat his dad, Rick Krause.
Awesome.
In the cherry spitting championships. Krause in the championships in Eau Claire spit 56 feet, 7.5 inches, beating his dad. Brian goes by the nickname Young Gun. His dad is known as Pellet Gun. I assume he's a rapid fire type. It's all technique. I watched some of this on the TV. You kind of bend back at your waist and then propel yourself forward, and you got to time the right at the peak of your kind of swing.
Is there something genetically or physiologically about, I don't know, the shape of their mouths or esophagus that makes these two gentlemen very good at it?
I don't know. I did notice some commonalities in the body types of the many competitors. They're not, you know, what you would call typical traditional athlete form. But they can spit a cherry pit farther than I can.
Maybe a lot of practice eating cherry pie as well as spitting the remnants of said pie.
We should mention Eau Claire, clear water. That means clear water.
Mm. So it's in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And clear water is in Florida.
Michigan. I know.
It's in Michigan. Oh, wait. This Eau Claire is in Michigan?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
There's
See?
A lot of Eau Claire's
yeah,
out there.
No kidding.
Oh, there's clear water everywhere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Less
Jersey.
And less.
Mm. Matt, what do you got?
I have one of the most viewed right now at NPR.org. It's all about airline attendants. Airlines, as we all know, are cutting flights, adding surcharges to flyers to compensate for high oil prices, and all of these things are, as you would imagine, annoying the hell out of customers. So guess who's caught in the middle? Flight attendants. Don't be mean to the flight attendants. They just want to keep you safe and serve you a tasty beverage and peanuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except the ones with attitudes.
Yeah, well, here's NPR's Frank Langfitt with one of the most viewed at NPR.org.
3 years ago, Stephanie Steffenhagen got the job she'd been hoping for.
I've always wanted to be a flight attendant, you know, that little girl dream. You see the flight attendant, oh, I want to be like her.
She now flies for a U.S. Airways commuter service. But in her brief career, Steffenhagen has seen a lot of change. Today, she has fewer things to offer passengers, and they're increasingly mad about it. One of her toughest jobs is just getting women to put their purses in the overhead. She says the conversations often go like this.
Ma'am, can I place your carry-on, you know, in the overhead, your purse? But I have to have it next to me. And I'm like, ma'am, you can get it out during in-flight just for takeoff and landing. And I'm telling you, I have to fight with some of these passengers to get all their stuff up there.
And she expects things will only get worse.
I don't know if you know, they're going to start charging for bags. I'm dreading what they're going to try to bring on the aircraft.
Steffenhagen is 34. She makes about $30,000 a year. On her days off, she bartends to make extra cash. She usually flies to places like Greensboro, North Carolina, or Islip, Long Island. She dreams of more exciting routes, but she wonders if the time is running out.
I do want to go to maybe a mainline carrier and do the Paris-London overnights. But I don't know now, because is that airline going to still be there in 2 years?
What we worked to create was actually a profession.
That's Patricia Friend. She runs the Association of Flight Attendants, a big union. Friend hoped that her members would be able to enjoy a stable, middle-class lifestyle.
Support a family, educate their children, have health care, and earn a pension. That's gone.
The fortunes of airline workers have been falling for years. After the terrorist attacks of 9/11, companies began slashing wages and benefits. To save money, airlines are putting crews in cheaper hotels. Stephen Shems flies for US Air.
We used to be downtown Chicago, right there on the Miracle Mile, right in the heart of downtown Chicago, and now we're at a hotel in Skokie at a strip mall, 40 minutes from the city without transportation in.
In recent months, the airline's finances have worsened. The cost of oil is wiping out profits. Erin Gailey feels the impact of oil prices all the time. She flies for Alaska Airlines. I met up with her at a hotel during a layover outside of Washington, D.C.
We're taking every piece of weight off the airplane we can. If that means not carrying as many supplies in the back, anything from not as much bottled water, not as many utensils, every pound that we can take off the airplane is going to save us money in fuel.
And sometimes, that means Gailey just runs out of things.
One of my favorite lines that I sometimes say to people when they look at me and say, "What do you mean you don't have any more ketchup?" or pretend like you're camping.
Camping is not what most passengers have in mind. When Gailey got into the business in the 1980s, airlines actually competed on service.
In coach, we always had a wine bottle on every tray.
Those were the days. Gailey says the role of the flight attendant is more complicated now. As flying has become more trying, there's more conflict in the cabin, and it falls to flight attendants to diffuse it.
We can't call 911. We are the police. We are the psychiatrist. We are the doctor. We are the nurse. We are the bomb squad.
Have a good flight.
I join Gailey on the bus to the airport. I meet some of her colleagues. They say apathy is up and morale is down. As Gailey prepares to go through security, she has a parting thought. It's about professionalism.
I understand it's day-to-day for some folks, and I understand it's been very painful, but for me, it's about my personal integrity. I still do an excellent job. I do a better job than I did 25 years ago. I think I work for one of the best carriers in the nation. If I didn't, I wouldn't keep going.
And with that, she heads towards the metal detectors and a nearly six-hour flight back home.
And that is NPR's Frank Langfitt. You can find links to that story and all the stories you heard on the most on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.